with it, so help me here. I want to try to keep my talk somewhat general because I know we have quite a diverse audience here. And rather than bore you with a very long monologue, I'd rather open it up to have a discussion and a Q&A about what appears to be the critical topic of the day, and that's Iraq. I'm a Kurd from the northern part of the country, from Iraqi Kurdistan. And it's obviously what's happening in Iraq today is on all of our minds. It's on you as Americans. Have your friends, brothers and sisters, or sometimes parents involved in this liberation? America has sacrificed a great deal for my country. We are going through a very difficult period, and I am not here to tell you that everything is going well. I'm not here to spin the current situation to tell you that we're on the right track or that we're pleased with the current situation. We, in Iraq, both in the north and throughout the country, understand America's frustration, appreciate America's sacrifice, and clearly understand that the people in the United States are far from happy about the troops being in Iraq right now, given the current deteriorating situation in the country. All is not lost. We shouldn't lose hope. I think there is a light at the end of the tunnel. And what can give us that inspiration is to go through what, look through what we went through as Kurds. We've had a tough history. The Kurdistan region was decimated by Saddam's regime. We had 4,000 of our villages massacred and completely flattened by the former regime. We had hundreds and thousands of our citizens killed. We had chemical and biological weapons used in over 250 instances. We had our livestock completely wiped out. We have managed to rise up from the ashes of tyranny to get to where we are today with the help of the United States in the protection that the U.S. provided in the no-fly zones throughout the 90s, allowed us to develop a civil society, allowed us to develop our governing institutions. We went through our rocky periods. We went through our infighting between the various political groups in the Kurdistan region. But we were able to overcome a lot of those issues to get to where we are today. And we are constantly touted as a success story in Iraq, as a potential model for the rest of the country. Some have even gone as far as to say that the plurality that exists in Kurdistan and the civil society that exists in Kurdistan can be a positive influence on other parts of the Middle East. We're proud of the progress that the Kurdistan region has made. That progress has happened by and large because of and despite of US foreign policy. But obviously, we're all working on a much bigger project right now, and that's to salvage something from the deteriorating situation in Iraq. The surge is something that's on everybody's lips right now. It's in the media. It's being analyzed to death by the commentators on TV. Is it succeeding? Is it not succeeding? I think initially we've seen signs of progress. We've seen signs of violence in the capital, especially the sectarian violence from the various different groups decreasing. But we have seen an increase in other types of attacks elsewhere in the country, which makes us have to really focus on the fact that the problem of Iraq today is not entirely a military problem. It cannot only be solved by a military alone. It's going to require a serious political strategy and a very robust economic development strategy. And I think these things have to go hand in hand. Up until now, we have been focusing too much on the military side of things in Iraq. And that is, I'm not belittling it, it's critical. But at the same time, we cannot get the majority of the Iraqi citizens on our sides, on your sides, by focusing on the military alone. It's up to the Iraqi government to start functioning in a more professional and effective manner. They have to start providing services for the people of that country, turning on electricity, giving better health care, giving good education, the basic things that people here are demanding for, the same things that people in Iraq are demanding. And that, unfortunately, is not something that can be imposed by the United States. You cannot turn our government from a bad government into an effective government overnight. We have got to do that. The Iraqi government has to do that. And I think that when the CPA was governing Iraq, when Ambassador Bremer was governing Iraq, you had a lot of influence over the situation on the ground. You were able to make decisions on behalf of that country. But those days don't exist anymore. There is an Iraqi government that is sovereign. Whether it's the best government, whether it's the most democratic government, these are all things that we can debate. But this is the government that exists, and it's far from effective right now. But at least there is, I think, a willingness on a major component within the government that wants to make things move in the right direction. And it's now for the United States, in my opinion, to help nurture those ongoing discussions, not tell us what to do or how to do it, but really to allow us to make the compromises that we need to make in order to make the process move forward. On the political track, much needs to be done. We have at the moment a situation where Iraqi society has polarized considerably. We have people looking at themselves in their ethnic or their sectarian identity. And it's really Iraq's history that's made people think that way. The fact that we've never had a just government, we've never had a government in Iraq that has ruled justly, that has been effective, that has treated everybody equally, has always had resentment by one group or another. So at the moment we have a situation where the different communities are mistrustful of one another, do not believe that a centralized government can rule effectively. Iraq as a state hasn't been there to provide for the citizens. So people are feeling more comfortable being Shia or being Sunni or being Kurdish, and they feel that it's their ethnic or their sectarian identity that ultimately is going to protect them and not the state of Iraq. So that's an issue that we have to either overcome or work around. This is a reality on the ground. To think that Iraq is this one unified, harmonious country where everybody gets along is very wrong. And I think sometimes when people in Washington are devising policies for the way forward, they're missing the major component of the fact that there are communities here that have centuries of mistrust and centuries of animosity towards one another. And unless this political situation, unless the political system that is being intended to be drawn up in Iraq addresses that insecurity, we will not have a successful outcome. National reconciliation is a key component of making progress or not in Iraq. This is, again, part and parcel of Iraq's history, but also of Iraq's present. We have an issue with the Ba'ath Party members of the former regime that were all sent home or are now mainly prohibited from participating in government. This has alienated millions of people from the society, and while many of them may have been very senior in the former administration, many of them may have been criminals, and many of them really shouldn't be allowed back into a senior civil servant role or in the military or in the security services. There were some other jobs that really were not so harmful, and maybe there has to be some leniency in terms of the implementation of the so-called de-Ba'athification policy that was put in place. A critical component is also the economic development, and I think this is something that we have largely overlooked in Iraq. People have argued with me, well, you can't have economic development unless you have some sort of security, a secure environment. But I would argue back to say you cannot have a secure environment unless you give people economic development. We have a large workforce that is not being put to use now. People are sitting idle without jobs. Reconstruction is the title of my speech today. If we put half of these idle people into work in reconstructing, we can. When you put them to work, you're taking them off. Taking them out of the insurgencies, you're giving them a job, you're giving them a potential for a future. And I think this is something we haven't worked well enough at. Not the entirety of the country is not in chaos. There are parts of the country that are today stable and quiet and conducive for economic development. The Kurdistan region is one of them. There's many parts of the south of the country are quiet and stable today. There are even parts of the east of the country and east of Baghdad that are stable and quiet today. But our strategy collectively has been a wrong one to date, and that has been to focus on the trouble spots, try to fix the trouble spots while ignoring, by and large, the successful and stable areas. And what we're trying to do is convince people to refocus their efforts on expanding on the success stories, isolating the trouble spots, and then we can use the successes around the country as a point of reference to leverage the people that live in the trouble spots to say, you too can have it better if you cooperate with the government, if you show a willingness to cooperate and collaborate. And they can see the benefits of, obviously, we can look at the Kurdistan region as an example. If we can do it in the north and come back from where we were to where we are today, then other parts of the country can also do this. So I think the surge has been important. It's improved a bit of confidence. It's been good for the U.S. morale and the U.S. image in Iraq. And I think this plays into question when we hear the debates in Washington about withdrawals and setting dates for American withdrawals from Iraq. I think one of the things that has been a plus side of this local recent surge is the image of the United States in Iraq, because as the Iraqi security services are being developed, and there's still some mistrust, and if an Iraqi army unit goes into a neighborhood that is predominantly one sect or another, depending on that neighborhood, it could be greeted with hostility or fear or suspicion. But whenever a U.S. contingent goes in with that Iraqi battalion, it kind of calms the situation, and people know that this is a legitimate force that is in this area to do good. So that really counters the argument that some have said that Americans are a magnet for the violence, and your presence is the cause of the problem, and if you withdraw that presence, then you won't have the problem. That is not the case. There is only a minority within the country, extremists within certain camps, that are opposed to your presence in the country. At the moment, the majority of the people do not fully trust the country's own security services and feel that the United States is an honest broker in this instance. And I think that's why it's critical that your forces remain in some fashion until the Iraqi security services are somewhat professionalized. Now, we understand that we cannot have an open-ended commitment of your sacrifices forever. And that's why we are saying that it's important for Iraq to continue to make progress. It's important for the international community to continue pressurizing Iraq in order to make progress. And the progress has to be on those three tracks, otherwise we will not succeed. The progress has to be on the political track, on the economic track, and on the security track. And while there are many challenges, as a Kurd, we are very concerned about the current situation. We're very concerned about the current debate in the United States. We're very concerned about how Americans are thinking about their troops in the country. And the talk of withdrawal, the drumbeat for withdrawal, is getting louder and louder. And as Kurds, who by and large are overwhelmingly pro-American, we share very similar values to Americans do. We do believe in a system of democratic governance. The Kurdistan region is no Swiss democracy by any state of affairs, but we're heading towards some sort of democracy. We're heading towards a civil society, and we feel that there should be an investment in at least protecting and ensuring the preservation of this relatively stable and civil society in the heart of the Islamic Middle East. And any premature withdrawal could jeopardize this really emerging bright spot in an overwhelmingly dark part of the world, which is the Middle East. Which is why, we to date do not have any security guarantees. We don't have any assurances by the American government that the hard-earned gains of the Kurdistan region will be protected in the event of failure in Iraq. It's something that, as allies, we consider ourselves allies of the United States, that we will continue to seek. We feel that we have a lot to offer both Iraq and the United States, and we hope that we can continue this dialogue. The Kurds, we've committed ourselves to a federal democracy in Iraq. Kurds overwhelmingly want independence from Iraq. If you ask a Kurdish citizen, I'm sure if you ask many of the Kurds that are in the room here today whether they want their own country, I'm sure many of them will say, yes, we want our own country. But unfortunately, reality has dictated a way of life on us that tells us that we have to be part of the various countries that the Kurds are scattered across. And that, if that were to happen, and if that is to happen, it's got to be based on certain rules and wishes and demands of our people. And one of the things that we've constantly put forward for Iraq is a federation. We're hearing a lot about systems of government and the regionalization of Iraq, and we strongly believe that Iraq can no longer be ruled by a central government. It can only be ruled by some sort of federal entity where power is devolved from the central government, devolved to the various administrative regions in the country. And I think this is one way of easing the tensions that exist between the various communities. Because Shiites can never trust a Sunni-led government, Sunnis can never trust a Shiite-led government, and Kurds will never trust an Arab-led government. And this situation is unfortunate, but it dictates that in the future, if Iraq is to succeed, there has to be a way of addressing these insecurities, and a federal solution is purely one of the only viable solutions to keep Iraq intact in one way or another. And I think I've covered most of the key issues here. I would just add one more thing, and that is we are in the process of building a country almost from scratch. When many of us went to Iraq in 2003, we were amazed at how devastated Iraqi society was, how devastated Iraq's infrastructure was. And you know, it wasn't just about taking out the top level of the government. There was nothing. The society was rotten. The infrastructure was rotten. The ministries, the civil servant workforce was rotten. The universities and the education systems were completely rotten. All of these things are going to require time to rebuild from the ground up. And for the engineers here among you, you all know that laying the foundations is probably the most important part of any project. And I think what we're doing right now in Iraq is laying the foundations for a new country. And it's if we rush this process, if we don't do it right, if we don't do it correctly, then I'm afraid that what we're trying to build will only come crashing down several years from now. And I'll probably be back here having another lecture about the need to get your troops back into Iraq to help do this another way. And I don't think anyone, neither you or I, have the stomach for that. And with that, I want to thank you for your attention. And I'm more than happy to answer any questions that you may have.